He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday. It's the Monday. It's the post-Easter, post-Passover, whatever else edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And we are here at the beginning of a new earnings season. Oh, boy. Didn't we just finish the old earnings season? It seems like they come around rather quickly. But we will be talking about that in a bit here, along with a lot of other stories in the market today. Right now, the Dow is down 1 point. Wake up, Dow. It's a new week. It's at 33,484. The S&P is down 26 to 4,078. A little bit of weakness in the big tech stocks. NASDAQ down 151. But I will say, it looks better underneath the surface than it does on the surface. It's usually just the opposite of that. You've got the Russell 2000 actually positive. I'm seeing quite a few risk-on stocks actually doing pretty well underneath the surface of the market, as evidenced by the Russell 2K, up 0.3%. Crude oil is down a nickel to $80.65. Gold is down $23 per ounce, right at $2,000 per ounce. Or $32,000 per pound. Silver down 19 cents to $24.90. The 10-year, there's the big story. That's why tech is down. I found the culprit. The 10-year's up 13 basis points to 3.42. And more evidence of risk on today. Bitcoin up 310 to 28,234. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show. Welcome to a new week. I feel locked, loaded, ready to go. Can't wait to pour through some charts today. I already looked at about 100 just as we were getting ready to go on the air here. And I actually saw some better action underneath the surface of the market than what the indexes might suggest. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, 24 years as a professional money manager, 24 years on the radio behind the mic, and I'm here with Barry Keit, our chartered financial analyst, and he's reporting in from where are you today, Barry?
Hey, so we had to our sons and came to Greece for a school trip. So all of his other school trips have been canceled because of COVID. So this is the first school trip that he's a broad trip that he's had since he was in elementary school. So
you're in Santorini
doing a little chaperone. Yeah, we're doing a little chaperoning with the Bishop England group from Catholic school in over there in Daniel Island in South Carolina, and we went to Greek Mass yesterday on Sunday. It was their Palm Sunday.
That had to be
Easter,
interesting.
Sunday. Yeah, it was great. I didn't understand much of it. It was in Greek, but you can get the gist of it if you know what you're listening for.
Now, when I was in grade school, we didn't go to Greece. I mean, we went to Anaheim from San Diego, you know, which is just two hours north of San Diego. I don't ever remember being offered a Greek trip when I was in school.
We signed him up because, like I said, he had three other ones canceled. I think one to Cape Canaveral, one to D.C., and there was one other one that got canceled too because of COVID. So we felt a little bad. So
yeah,
we put them all together in one.
Well, if you got to hit one of them, the Greek one is the best one. It's way better than Cape Canaveral. Okay, now let's say. The market this week. There was a lot of news in the market here. I couldn't believe it. I had to go into overtime this morning preparing the show because there's so much news out there. And, of course, this is the beginning of a new earnings season, and we got a lot to say about that. Now, let's pick up where we left off on Thursday. On Thursday, the Dow was up. Well, the Dow was pretty flat, but the NASDAQ finally had a positive day on Thursday. It was up 91 points. The NASDAQ's been under a little pressure, and I'm going to just say that I don't see anything unusual there. Other than it was overbought. I mean, it was ridiculous, the kind of action that was going into the NASDAQ as we were coming into the end of the first quarter, which was 10 days ago when the quarter ended. And in my opinion, the tech stocks were way overbought, and they needed to cool off some. And that's pretty much what they did all last week. And then I think on Thursday, I think the jobs report, Barry, came in, or on Friday, actually. So the market hasn't had a chance to react to the jobs report until today. And I just think when you add the two facts together that the NASDAQ is down today and interest rates are up 12 points, isn't that saying that the jobs report came in a little too hot for the market's taste, Barry?
It did, and I mean the jobs market continues to be strong, and of course I think a lot, you know, some traders made some bets on Thursday, right, thinking that since we had a light ADP report that we were going to have, you know, kind of a light non-farm payrolls report, but it came in pretty strong, and certainly wasn't as weak as the ADP report, and that's what we're seeing here in the Treasury market, where you said you've got the 10-year up 11 basis points or so. Which is really, you know, that's putting, as we've mentioned, that obviously lowers PEs and makes NASDAQ stocks less expensive.
Yeah, the PE ratios contract a little bit, but I really don't see any issue. Maybe they got a little bit too fat there leading up to the end of the quarter. And, of course, you know, this week we've already had a few earnings reports come in, but that non-farm payrolls report came in at 236,000, which when I heard it on Friday, I said that was just about right. That sounds to me to be good. They were expecting 240,000, but I guess, you know, when you looked underneath it and into all the details and this and that, it came in just a little bit hotter than expected. And that's what's impacting mostly the market here today, although we're not down that much. We're just off a little bit. Okay, so earnings season. J.P. Morgan will report, and Jamie Dimon had some interesting comments on the U.S. economy, which we'll get to here in a bit. Wells Fargo will report, Citigroup, Delta Airlines. We had one this morning in Greenbrier. Albertsons will report, Kroger, and that's about it. I mean, we start off kind of slow, and then as we go each week, we pick up a little more momentum, and those earnings starts eventually become a tsunami, and it's almost impossible to keep up with them all. But at the end of the day, what we're watching for is the overall impact on the S&P 500. So we especially watch those S&P 500 earnings reports because that's pretty much the number, the aggregate earnings for the S&P 500 that the market takes its cue from. It takes a look at what those expectations are for the next 12 to 24 months, and we apply a multiple to that, and we come up with our target prices for the S&P 500. And obviously, we've gone over a lot of different target prices recently, but the average target price for the S&P 500 right now remains at about 4,600, and we're just over 4,000. So according to the analyst community, the macro analyst out there, projecting the S&P 500 earnings and the multiple, their consensus is 4,600. Even though you've got some outliers that are way off, way lower than that, we had last week J.P. Morgan saying that we're going to go clear down to 3,500 and revisit the old lows. And you've got some others. I don't know that there's that many too far higher. I haven't seen any 5,000s lately. We had a bunch of them last year, but not this year. early last year, that is, and that consensus remains right at about 4,600 for the S&P 12 months from now. Okay, now, we've always got people throwing water on things out there, and one of them seems to be the International Monetary Fund. They like to warn a lot. And they're warning about the same thing we're warning about. You know, I think the biggest threat out there right now seems to be kind of the geopolitical tensions all over the world, whether it's in the Middle East or the Far East or obviously Russia and Ukraine. Let's hear what they've got to say. And then we're going to listen to Jamie Dimon weigh in on what he thinks the forecast for the U.S. economy and the markets look like right now. This is Bill Gunderson. It's the Best Stocks Now show. We'll be right back. Here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, here's what the IMF chief warns. Global growth prospects for medium term are the weakest since 1990. Okay, well, that's going back quite a while. That's got to be pretty significant. That's 30 years ago. With rising geopolitical tensions and still high inflation, a robust recovery remains elusive. Well, okay, I'll take a good recovery. I don't need a robust recovery. This is according to Kristalina Georgieva, managing director of the International Monetary Fund, also known as the IMF. She said this in a recent speech in Washington, and she says that these geopolitical tensions are on top of the recent pressures in the banking sector that have made the global inflation fight that much more complex, she added. They're now calling for 3% average global growth over the next 5 years. And that's well below the 3.8% that we've had for the last two decades. So that is, I mean, that's a pretty sizable slowdown, going from 3.8% per year down to 3% per year. And she also says that it's the advanced economies that are expected to weigh the most on global growth. And, of course, the advanced economies would mostly be the U.S. and Europe. And why are...
That's the part that I...
Yeah, go ahead.
That's the part that I thought was the most, interesting piece in terms of, I think, around 90% of the advanced economies are expected to post a decline in their growth rate for this year, which is, and like you said, U.S. and Europe are, that's primarily where those advanced economies are.
Yeah, maybe Japan a little bit. But, and it's mostly because of the interest rate situation that she's blaming for that. Of course, she says the bright spot, India and China, are anticipated to account for 50% of this year's global growth. So what global growth there will come from basically India and China. She calls the invasion of Ukraine by Russia an inflationary development. She says it worsens the cost of living. It brings more hunger around the world. It risks wiping out the peace dividend we have enjoyed for the last three decades. And it adds friction to trade and finance. And she also, talked about the sudden collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and Silvergate, and the issues at Credit Suisse. Those were pretty big events. She also advises that the central banks need to continue to keep inflation under control. Now, Jamie Dimon, okay, I think just by nature, if you're the CEO of a company, you're always worried, okay? And Jamie Dimon seems to always be worried, which I can't blame him. I mean, he's the head of the biggest banks of the world, if not the biggest bank in the world. He says the banking stresses that erupted last month increase the chance of a U.S. recession. He says it's not definitive, but it's like another weight on the scale, tipping. He says people are not borrowing as much. They're cutting back a little. They're pulling back a little bit. He says it won't necessarily force a recession, but it is recessionary. Now, here's the good news. Jamie Dimon says on the positive side, he considers the bank crisis to be almost over. Well, I hope he's right, because I continue to see money going into gold and into U.S. treasuries. Although not today, maybe that's a good sign that, you know, they're driving gold prices down, so that means some money's leaking out of gold. And I think investors were seeking a safe haven, you know, after those banks collapsed. And we're seeing some selling in the bond market today. So I think that's good news rather than bad news, because maybe people are starting to come out of those safe havens. Now, here's something Jamie Dimon's been saying for a long time. There are still storm clouds on the horizon. Now, this is the part you got to listen to, because here he gets a little more serious. He says the storm clouds chiefly are quantitative tightening, higher inflation for longer, and the Ukraine-Russia war. Now, listen to this. He says these are pretty strong things. The economy has not faced a combination like that since World War II. And it's still early when looking at the potential outcome. In other words, you can't even predict the outcome of where this is going to go. And he says we will be writing about quantitative easing and quantitative tightening for 50 years. So, I mean, that's a pretty strong statement that the economy hasn't faced a combination like we're facing today since World War II. But I will also say that, you know, Jamie Dimon has made some pretty dire statements like that in the past. I mean, I think through the whole entire time of the 2009 bottom in the market up until now, where you've had one of the longest bull run in the history, I've heard him say dark clouds on the horizon many times.
But he likes the storm. He likes the weather references for sure.
Yes. I mean, that's kind of biblical. You know, they refer to the weather and lightning and all this kind of stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And he's definitely referring to that in kind of biblical terms. That you got to go back to World War II to see conditions like this. Okay. Anyways, stocks, individual stocks to watch today. We know that First Republic Bank is suspending their dividend on their preferred notes. Okay, that's not a good sign. That means that they're still under pressure from a liquidity point of view. First Republic is down 1.6%. Taiwan Semiconductor's under some pressure. They're working with the Biden administration. They want to apply for the U.S. CHIPS Act, even though they're a Taiwan company. But we've seen all of the kind gestures and reassurances that we're behind Taiwan here recently. We don't really know where that situation is going to end up either. But Taiwan Semiconductor, under a little bit of pressure today, down 3%. We like the stock because, I mean, somebody's got to make the chips. Yeah, it's great that NVIDIA designs these chips and Qualcomm and AMD, but at the end of the day, somebody's got to make them. And Taiwan makes 80%. Taiwan Semiconductor, the company, makes 80% of the chips, and soon they'll be making them in Arizona. So I suppose that they should get a little bit of that CHIPS Act money. Micron is having a decent day because Samsung is going to cut production. Just like OPEC cut production in oil, sometimes these chip companies, and Samsung and Micron are in the flash memory part of the chip sector, which is kind of the commoditized part of the chip sector, and that's good for Micron that their competitor is going to cut production. That should keep prices propped up. Now, when we come back, Well, there's always Tesla news, always. Wait till you hear the latest on Tesla. And also a lot of news in the oil and energy front. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. We still have some red on the screen, but I'm seeing quite a bit of risk on underneath the surface of the market, and I'll try to point out some of those areas here in the second half of the show. I've seen the small caps, for instance, up 0.6% today. That's definitely a risk on area of the market. Bitcoin's usually a pretty good indicator, too, of risk on or risk off. Bitcoin is up 1.4% today. And then I'm seeing, despite a down day in the NASDAQ, I'm seeing a very big day for Western Digital, Micron, and a few others that we'll get into in a bit. In fact, as I look across the board at a lot of industries and sectors, I'm seeing quite a few winners in the S&P 500 from a pretty broad spectrum of industries out there. Okay, the next story that caught my attention today, my article this past weekend in the newsletter was a little bit on the history of OPEC and why OPEC came about. Part of it, well, OPEC originally came about with, you know, several countries, and their main purpose was to control the oil market and the price of the oil markets. And, you know, there was a time when they had a stranglehold on us. I was there in the oil embargo back in the 70s when they cut off supply and we had to wait in long lines to get gasoline, etc. And there's been many oil scares over the years. And then along came the U.S. shale boom, which I also was a witness to, and an investor in a lot of those shale companies. In fact, when I wrote my book back in 2013, I must have had 6 or 7 of the booming oil shale companies at that time, like Continental Resources and others like that.
And Chesapeake?
Oh, yeah. And in reaction to that shale boom, OPEC added other countries. Okay, they added Russia and Kazakhstan and other countries to OPEC, and it became OPEC Plus. Well, recently, out of nowhere, really, Saudi Arabia, pretty much out of spite at the U.S., I would say, cut production. And, you know, we had $63 per barrel oil just a couple, 2, 3 weeks ago during the banking crisis, and all of a sudden, oil's up $17 per barrel since then. But the interesting thing I read today is that Saudi Arabia is going to maintain their crude supply to the Asian refiners, but not to us. So that just bolsters my theory that it was pretty much a stab at us. The U.S. and Saudi Arabia have not been getting along too well recently.
They've given it to us both ways before, too. So you remember with the shale boom, remember they actually upped production in order to get the price down to try to weed out a lot of those shale producers that needed, you know, the price of oil up at a particular price. And so, you know, at one point, I think it was in the mid 2010s where they're essentially tried to make oil cheaper to get rid of some of our shale companies. Exactly, particularly the oil sands in Canada. So.
Well, the break even price basically is $63 per barrel. So, I mean, if you get under 63, they stop drilling for it. They leave it in the ground and wait for it to come back. I still think the volatility in oil is going to continue, but I think that the floor, I think there's a floor down there around that 63, which we recently saw. Something happens at that point in time, and it mostly OPEC has the power, to cut off the spigot. And I also did a study on how much oil in my article. I hope you got my newsletter this past weekend. How much oil, how many barrels of oil are used per day, and who the biggest producers of that oil are. And you may be surprised or not surprised to know that by far and away, the U.S. is the biggest producer of oil in the world, with Saudi Arabia or Russia in second place, and then, of course, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Middle East countries. And the U.S., we actually became a net exporter, meaning we were producing more than we were consuming during the Trump administration, I think maybe the third year of his administration. And then, of course, the new administration, which is less oil-friendly and more, environmentally sensitive, has put a lot of headwinds into oil drilling in the U.S., and now we're having to rely on imports to meet our demand. We produce almost what we need, but there's a shortfall, and the rest of that we have to import, which gives them more power on the global markets to control price. So here they are. Asia, you're going to get plenty. Don't worry. That's coming from Saudi Arabia, who they've now buddied up with. That's a major, major global event that took place when China was able to come in and put Saudi Arabia and Iran together. I mean, that's, wow, okay, that's a big deal. That those two countries, it wasn't that long ago that Iran was flying drones down and bombing the Saudi Arabian refinery. And now those two have ganged up and teamed up. So anyways, there's been a lot of positioning, I would call it, on the world stage here recently in both the oil markets and, of course, militarily. Exxon, they're looking at Pioneer Natural Resources. This is probably the stock of the day, PXD. Usually when there's a rumor that a company is looking at another company, it usually comes true. Somebody knows something. They don't just put these rumors out there where there's smoke, there's fire. And PXD right now is up 6.6%. They're headquartered in Irving, Texas. And, of course, Exxon has been pulling out of other areas and really kind of coming back to the U.S. focus here. And PXD seems to be one they are looking at. That would be a mega deal. And I was also reading that Europe faces a cost crunch next winter. Okay, that's a long ways off, but they did not sign enough LNG contracts to make up for what they lost, which is 80% of their needs through the destruction of the pipeline from Russia. So we'll have to see, but keep that in mind that could be inflationary for Europe next winter. As they have not signed enough contracts to meet the demand. Oil refiners lead Bank of America's energy sector outlook. The oil refiners are volatile, but at the end of the day, they're calling it, Bank of America is calling this the golden age of refining. There is an ETF called CRAK, C-R-A-K, which is the refiners. The refiners had their best quarter ever in their history. And Bank of America's top pick in the sector, I like it, is Valero, because it's also one of our top picks and top holdings. you just can't get away from the refiners. And let's not forget, when was the last refinery built? 40 yeah, years ago?
Like, yeah, and capacity-wise, I mean, we really haven't expanded any capacity. We haven't built any new ones.
No.
I think they've expanded maybe some capacity at places that already exist, but a lot of those are coming offline versus coming online. So
yes, and the transition to electric vehicles is picking up speed, but it still represents like 2 or 3% of the cars out there. So there's going to continue.
Well, I did the math here. You want to know how much it is a gallon here, Bill?
How much?
$9. That when you do the conversion from liters and you do the conversion from euros, it's about $9 a gallon.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so how many electric cars do you see over there? Mostly electric?
You see a few, and they're smaller, of course. But, I mean, there's a lot of cars here. You look at the petrol stations, they're packed. And
okay, at $9 per gallon.
You look at the number up there. Yeah, I'm going down the road. I'm going down the road doing the math on my phone, I'm like, $9? I'm like, I do it again. I'm like, still $9. I'm like, man.
Well,
but, yeah.
Being a Scandinavian,
I'd
be on my bike at $9 per gallon, Anyways, Tesla, they're in the news every day. How about the latest? Their cameras are capturing, pictures of you in the car and movies, sometimes in uncompromising positions. And then they're spreading it around the country. Now there's a lawsuit against Tesla from a privacy point of view. Tesla reports earnings next week. Get ready for that one. We'll be right back.
You gotta go where you wanna go.
And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, broadcasting from Charleston, South Carolina, and Barry Kite, who's joining us from Santorini, Greece. And we're getting an update on the $9 per gallon price for gasoline at your local Greek gas station.
Yeah, could you imagine, California's been kind of close, but could you imagine $9 gas in the U.S.? I mean, I don't know what that would do economically just from a trucking standpoint. It's unbelievable.
It sounds to me like they want you to buy an electric car in Greece. That's just what it sounds like to me. They're not going out of their way to bring oil and gasoline prices down. But anyways, okay, look, I look underneath the surface of the market today, and look at the S&P 500, for instance, the various stocks from various sectors in the market that are doing quite well. PXD, which I call the stock of the day, is up 7.2%. That's Pioneer Natural Resources on a buyout rumor from ExxonMobil. Western Digital, WDC, is up 7.2% today. That's kind of a key tech stock. Micron, another key tech stock, is up 6.9% today. AMD, underneath the surface of the NASDAQ, is up 1.8% today. And then other industries that I see represented here in stocks that are moving to the upside. I don't know what got hold of the fertilizer stocks all of a sudden, but they're having a good day. CF Industries is up 4.7%. Mosaic is up 4%. They haven't really been very good performers. We made some money in the fertilizer stocks a few years back. We got out of them and haven't gotten back in, but they are making some noise. You still have upwards pressure with a lot of the fertilizer coming out of Ukraine and Russia, and of course you had the I'll tell you what else. Well, I just dawned on me why the fertilizer stocks, natural gas prices are going up today. I mean, they've been hitting just unbelievable. Natural gas prices have been pounded. That's what they need to run their cars on over there in Europe is natural gas. Those natural gas prices have just been pounded. And but it's up today, and that's helping the fertilizer stocks. The other area of the market that's very vibrant today, I'm not sure why, the steel stocks are having a very good day. Stocks like Reliance, RS, Cleveland Cliffs, CLF, U.S. Steel, X, and a lot of other steel stocks. I mean, usually the only reason steel stocks go up is on demand or price hikes, and that's usually coming from China. They're the ones.
Well, yeah, that IMF report. I mean, that would tell you that you would possibly need less steel, right?
Yeah, but then again,
with global growth going down. Yeah.
The growth is coming from China and India, so maybe they're using.
Yeah.
Maybe the demand is coming from there. I don't know. The natural gas stocks are doing okay today. I see Chesapeake up 3.9%. APA is up 3.8%. EQT is up 4.7% today. I look at the Dow, and you see a couple big industrials having a good day. Caterpillar was really oversold. It's up 2.9% today. 3M's up 1% today. The missile stock, Raytheon, up almost 1% today. Disney's up 0.5%. The losers in the Dow. Here's where the real weakness is today, the big tech. Apple's down 2.4% today. I saw something about demand or, you know, not selling as well as they thought they would. And also Microsoft is off today. Microsoft is one of those stocks that was way overbought, just soaring there over the last month, really, on mostly this AI news. Microsoft is down 1.6% today, a little bit of profit-taking. Intel also, which has been overbought recently, in my opinion, is up 1.5% today. And here's the most encouraging of all. I mean, it's good to see the steel stocks. It's good to see the oil stocks. It's good to see some of these flash memory stocks doing well today and some industrials. But the bank stocks, which I've got to look. I put in a lot of new numbers last week in the banks. I updated some multiples a little bit and some earnings forecasts. And I'm going to be looking at about a dozen banks today to see if there's any value. You know, there hasn't been, but they've been cut in half, a lot of them. Maybe now there is. So I'll be looking at target prices to see if I can find a few values in that banking industry. Comerica would be a likely candidate. It's up 3.6% today. I'll be looking at the Best Stocks Now app.com. 5-year target price on Comerica. You got to be maybe on a bank I would 70% or better instead of 80% or better. Because banks, you know, by nature are pretty slow growing. It's hard to find a really, really fast growing undervalued bank, but I'll have my eyes out for them. Truist is up 2.8%. That's a good sign. And I think it's also a good sign that Jamie Dimon said that the banking crisis is almost behind us. It would be nice just to shove that one aside and not have to worry about that, because that could be catastrophic. And KeyCorp is up 2.6%. That would be another likely candidate. There's three of the 12 that I'm going to look at today to see if there might be.
How about those bank charts? How about the shape on those bank charts?
Well, I would just say
every one of them has that dip in that one day, and it's just, I mean, basically a sell-off. I mean,
yeah, and now, and then you had, you know, some downward pressure on them after that, and now they're building a bottom formation.
Right.
That's what I see.
Yep.
Much like tech did last December, and actually October started to build that bottom for me. So I'll be looking at those today. I'll be very active on Twitter today, at Bill Gunderson. And, of course, I'll be sending out private messages to my subscribers that get the live trading, and also a lot of the clients also follow the live trading today. So I'm looking for a pretty active day in an active market. If you didn't get last week's newsletter, a lot of information there about the energy sector and OPEC. You get two free weeks at GundersonCapital.com. And if you'd like to talk to us, participate in this bargain hunting that I'm undertaking right now, give us a call, 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.